Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning, Jacksonville. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV with Eddie and Chuck Farah from Farah & Farah. They're here to answer your legal questions. Give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045. Again, that phone number is 855-765-1045. And today we've got a very special guest. And who is that?
Thanks, Candace. With us today is bankruptcy attorney Mr. E.R. Musa here in Jacksonville. He's been doing it for a very long time. He's been a guest on the show before, and we've talked about, and I asked him to come in today because, if you remember, about 2 weeks ago, we had a very interesting discussion about student debt, and some people are saying, you know, the government should just forgive all the debt, and how the debt's really affected the economy, that these people who have gotten these degrees and owe all this money are now not able to afford purchasing a home, and it's really affecting their lifestyle. It's affecting everything, and so we're going to talk about what you can do about it. You can't discharge it in bankruptcy, but Mr. Moose is here to talk about what you can do if you've got student debt you can't deal with. But I first want to mention a couple of things. Of course, you know, this week was the passing of King Kong Bundy, a very famous wrestler, and I mean, the last couple of years, Chuck, as you know, I mean, the people who were there during the golden age of wrestling have just been going by the, I mean, just dying. I mean, dying off. I don't know what's going on, but it's
King
really,
Kong Bundy, 6'4", probably 450.
In his prime, he weighed in excess of 450. And
he always challenged Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan.
He never won the belt. He never won the championship. He lost to Hulk Hogan in WrestleMania 2 in a cage match. But I don't know if you have access to YouTube. There's one, as big as he was, I mean, one announcer said, when you run into King Kong Bundy's arm, it's like hitting a Sherman tank. And
very intelligent guy. Acted and was in movies. And
he was really, see how agile he was for the size. Go to YouTube. If you can find a match between him and Special Delivery Jones, King Kong Bundy gets in there, puts him in a bear hug, then does this avalanche move on him, belly flops him, and pins him in like, you know, 10 seconds. I mean, he was like a ballerina in the ring. I mean, this guy's 450 pounds. Unbelievable. But anyway, that's King Kong Bundy. He brought us a lot of exciting Saturdays, Chuck. You know?
Yeah, I mean,
one other thing is that we talked about
last. Oakland pass recently.
Didn't Gorilla Monsoon manage King Kong Bundy? I don't know. Something tells me Gorilla Monsoon was his manager, but
yeah, he always looked for a winner. That guy.
Yeah. Anyway, he was one heck of an announcer too. But anyway, last week we had a caller about overtime with salaried employees, and he was wanting to know what the amount was you had to make under to receive overtime if you're a salaried employee. Is $23,660. The Department of Labor wants to raise the limit to $35,308, which means, and this is not in effect yet, but it's going to be in effect in a few months, which means if you make less, if you're salaried and you make less than $35,308 a year, you're going to get overtime for anything over 40 hours a week. So that's a good thing. It's going to give more salaried employees overtime. It's not as much as what Obama wanted to do. He wanted to raise it to like somewhere in the 50s range, I think.
But you could earn over that amount, but not have the job description and the job duties, which would still allow overtime.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, if you're on by the hour. If you're making it by the hour. But if you're a salary, like Obama wanted to have it at 47,000 plus, that would encompass a lot of people. Yeah. So anybody making less than $47,000 a year would be entitled to time and a half or anything over 40, even if they were salaried.
So it looks like we have a caller on the line. It looks like David from Jacksonville is calling. There's a question about name changes when combining families. So, hi, David. How are you?
Hey, David.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I have a question. I have a biological son, and I'm about to get married to a woman who has two children of her own. We're getting married in May of this year, and after the marriage, we're going to change all of our names to my last name. My son, my biological son, his biological mother has not been in the picture since I got sole custody of him, which was 10 years ago. And she gave away all her rights of her own will. And I have sole custody of him and haven't seen or heard from her since. My question is, do I need to get a lawyer to change his name, or do I have to get her permission still? Okay. With her being out of the picture like that? Or maybe you can help me on that.
Well, I mean, have you looked at the Florida name change statute? Hello?
I have done some research, and basically what I've looked into was that I do have to have her permission,
right.
But I was just, you know, curious. I mean, does it account for anything that, you know, she willfully gave up all rights and hasn't been in the picture of her own choice since?
I mean, maybe the judge will do it without her permission because of that document you have or that order from the court. But there's a way to put her on notice. You can put her on notice. She doesn't show up for the hearing. If there's a hearing in front of the judge for the name change and she doesn't show up, he'll do it without her. So you got to track her down, and that's easy to do. You can call one of the local, if you don't know where she is, you can call like a local investigator and they'll find her. And then you can put her on notice and say, listen, we're going to be in front of the judge on, you know, June 25th. I'm doing a name change. And if she doesn't show up, the judge will do it without her. And even if she does show up, he may do it.
Okay. Well, I don't think you need a lawyer.
There's a place at the courthouse now where they'll help for name changes. I think there's a process at the clerk's office. Well, they'll walk you through it where you don't have to pay a lawyer.
Okay, awesome. Man, I really appreciate it. And I love listening to y'all's show. So thank you so much for giving your time.
No problem. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking about student loans in case you have some.
Okay, definitely. I will. Okay. Have a good one.
So you're, Mr. Issa, thanks for being here today. I know a couple of weeks ago, we really had a lively discussion about student loans. I pitched the idea that it would really help the economy if the government just forgave all the student loans, because so many people are, and they're, you know, it's like 7.5%. Right. These people get out of school, so they got this huge mortgage. It's affecting the housing market. I mean, it's just affected a lot of people. I mean, to me, you got the richest country in the world. I mean, they're spending trillions of dollars on everything else.
Right.
Can they take care of the people here? I mean, that, to me, it's a no-brainer that the people here should be. I mean, you know, you go to countries that are a lot poorer than America that provide free education. How can you deal? I mean, you probably come up with this a lot. You can't just charge it in bankruptcy. How can you deal with student debt?
Well, I mean, first of all, let me just say, if you say, well, how would it affect? There's, as of right now, this estimating there's about $1.5 trillion in outstanding student loan debt, and it's rising higher and higher each and every year. And there was, in fact, there prior in the 70s, there was, you did have the ability to discharge your student loan debt in bankruptcy. Then through the years, that was whittled away, till it was just private student loans. And then that was whittled away as well. So now it's possible to discharge a student loan debt in bankruptcy, but it's extremely difficult. You have to prove that you'd basically be living on the streets if you had to pay your student loan. Secondly, that that condition is going to last for the foreseeable future. And third, you haven't tried any other repayment option, which I could talk about in a second. And so it's a high hurdle for people to go through.
I mean, let's be realistic. How often have you gotten people been able to convince the court, whoever makes the decision, that I'll be on the streets if I have to make this payment.
It's very difficult. And sometimes it happens. I mean, if I'm just saying, if you got, I've had people come in with, you know, $300,000-$400,000 in student loans.
Wow.
And that's because
how do you get three or four hundred thousand in student loans?
Sometimes I call them serial college students. They start off with a bachelor's degree, then move on to a master's, then move on to a PhD, or sometimes they go on to professional schools like medical school or law schools or things of that nature. And there are situations, for instance, if you got $300,000-$400,000 in student loan debt and something happens to you where you can, there's no chance that you could earn anything more than maybe $20,000-$40,000 a year. And what you're required to pay under all the available repayment options, I'm talking about federal student loans, is not possible. So there are ways that you can do that. But again, that's not very often.
But what's a mortgage? What's a payment like? Oh, you say you have $300,000. What's okay. What would that monthly payment be?
Well, it depends. There's four different types in a federal student loan I'm talking about. Right. There are four different types of standard term repayments, pay them off over 10 years, 15 years. You just divide it all up. And then there's the income-based type student loans where the payment is based on your income. And that's the reason why if you have a federal student loan, I can tell you what first thing I do. Someone calls me up, if that's okay.
Right, yeah,
okay.
Sure. Go ahead.
Someone calls me up and says, listen, I got a student loan. I don't know. I'm behind on it. I'm being threatened. My wages are threatened to being garnished, or I'm getting letters from collectors. What do I need to do? First thing I ask them is, do you know if it's a federal student loan or a private student loan? Because the way you proceed with them are completely different. And often they don't know. They'll say, I don't know. It's run by Navient or Sallie Mae. And so, sometimes there are telltale signs. If there's a co-signer, it's most likely a private student loan. Very rarely is ever a federal student loan is. But once I determine what type of loan it is, if it's a federal student loan, I run an analysis. When I say an analysis, I get all the information I need. I go through the Department of Education's website. I prepare a 10-11 page analysis which talks about what exactly is your loans, what's the status of each loan, and what are the available repayment options that they got for them. And then I advise them, this is what I think you should do. If they said, okay, let's go ahead and do that, then we can get it in there.
What do you mean like a repayment? Give me an example. I mean, they've already under in a payment. They have a payment to make.
Yes,
I mean,
they do have a payment to make.
Let's say it's $4,000 a month. I mean, are you going to extend it for another 10 years to make it $2,000 a month?
Sometimes you can.
Is that what you're doing?
Well, yeah. Some people come in, first of all, sometimes they come in and they haven't made payments for a while, or their income is changing. Or if you graduate from school and 6 months after you graduate, if you do nothing at all and you got student loans, they'll automatically put you in a 10-year plan, which means that whatever the loan is, you divide it up over 120 months and you pay interest on it at about 4%, and that's what your monthly payment is. So it's much higher. However, there are other available loan amounts that I've had some where the range can be anywhere from $182 a month for people who are making pretty good money all the way up to, you know, $1,300, $1,400 a month, depending on which plan they're on. Sometimes if you're depending on your income and the number of people in your household, you may pay zero under an income repayment option. So
what do you mean zero?
I mean, based on the available repayment options, you just pay on a repayment plan based on your income in which you pay $0 each month. In other words, you don't pay anything at all. And after, depends on which plan you're on, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, depending on which one it is, if your income doesn't change, your situation doesn't change, whatever's left over will be forgiven.
Wow. My question is, how do they get under $200,000-$400,000 in debt? What is the process to get a loan? I mean, who determines whether somebody should get a loan?
Hold on. Okay. We're going to have you answer that right after the break. We have to go to a quick break on Consumer Law Hour, and we'll be taking your questions too. The phone number is 855-765-1045. Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV with Eddie and Chuck Fair from Fair and Fair. Here to answer your questions today, we've got a special guest. Talk talking about student loans. And so you can give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045. Again, that phone number is 855-765-1045. And so where were we before the commercial break?
Well, yeah, Chuck was just asking a question is how can someone accumulate, let's say, $100,000 plus in,
right,
in federal student loan debts when there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to pay that once they get out?
Right.
Yeah, so they're not lining up the degree sought with the earning potential and then loaning based on that. They're right. just saying, okay, well, you're going to this school. And they it may be a private school at $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting an education. You know, you want to be a teacher,
right,
which is an honorable profession. But, you know, the pay is not where it should be. And so they can, you know, they may rack up $200,000 in loans and become a teacher and are not able to pay it. I mean, so they're not hooking that. They're not coordinating that.
Well,
I mean, it's an issue.
It's not. And what normally happens, we all have kids that went to college. So if y'all remember that FAFSA application when they first went
right.
in, where they find out how much financial student aid are you entitled to. And, once you fill out that FAFSA application, it'll pretty much say, all right, you're eligible for this amount of money in federal student loans, and they'll pay it out. Now, as you go on, you can qualify for other federal student loans as well. So through the years, you can build up. I mean, I've had people come in with 20 separate federal student loans because each time, each semester, it's a brand new loan. And so they just keep going up and
mm-hmm.
up. And they're not worried about it for right now. I think most people are sophisticated enough to know that once they get out, based on their income level, they can enter into an income-based repayment plan that fits within their range. And I say, well, what does that mean? A lot of times it's based on, 15% of their gross income.
Okay, and, so the payment plan is where it kind of
where it all balances out.
Yeah, balances
and so
out.
What happens is that you might be on a payment plan that pays, let's say, $200 a month, $200 a month, and it's, let's say, it's a 10-year plan because there are some out there. Once that runs out after the 10 years, whatever's left over is forgiven from the Department of Education, but then you got to deal with the IRS, because they will send you a 1099, and that's where you got to plan ahead, talk to your tax expert to figure
that's
out.
That's a taxable event.
Yes.
They forget that forgiven debt.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, there's some that's not. I mean, because of, let's say, certain types of forgiveness, like disabilities or things of that nature, you may or may not, which is important with you guys, why I always talk to you guys. If you have anyone that has student loans and they become totally and permanently disabled, mm-hmm. we can file a petition to discharge their student loans based on their disability, as long as they're going to be disabled for more than 5 years. Yeah.
What about the private side? Over the break, I was asking about private student debt. What's the difference between private and the federal
okay.
in terms of your options?
That's a good – let me just go back a little.
Okay.
Listen, we can spend 5 hours on this thing here, but basically,
right.
I don't know about limited time.
It's in the news every day.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how big it was until we started talking about it. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. There's two types of student loans, either federal or private. In the federal loans, before 2010, you go to your bank or you go to your school, you apply for a student loan, then the bank will issue the money to the school. They had a guarantor, and so that once you get out, once you finish, if you don't make your payments at all or you fall behind, then the guarantor will contact the Department of Education, and the Department of Education would pay them, and then the Department of Education comes after you. In 2010, the Congress and Obama administration just said all student loans are going to be paid out directly from the Department of Education, from the government. So the banks were out of federal student loans at that point. Now, private student loans, the federal government is never involved in a private student loans. Sometimes, like Chuck was saying, there may not be enough money after you go through all the FAFSA applications and everything else to pay for other expenses. So you can go to Wells Fargo, Bank of America, wherever else, and they'll give you a student loan, and that's a private student loan. Now, how they're handled is there's a big difference in how they're handled, because if you fall behind and you got a federal student loan, they don't have to take you to court to get a judgment against you to start collecting from you. All they got to do is send you a notice saying that unless you get out of default or enter into a repayment plan, we're going to start garnishing 15% of your wages, taking your tax refunds, offsetting, if you're federal employees, your employee wages and also Social Security as well, with certain limited exceptions.
What if you're head of household? Can they still garnish your wages?
Yes, in the federal.
Wow.
Now, a private, it's just like a credit card, medical bill, or anything else. If you default, you don't make payment, collectors call you, and you don't make an agreement, they have to file a civil lawsuit against you, go to court, get a judgment, and you're entitled to all the exemptions that you would of just any other debt. The only difference is you can't discharge them in bankruptcy, with rare exceptions.
I mean, on the private side, I mean, what have you been able to do on the private side to help anybody? Can you get creative anyway? Like,
yeah,
how can you get creative with on the private side? Let me ask you, do you know what, we're going to take a break, but
right.
My question when we come back is, what percentage of the student debt typically is private and what is federal?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
And we'll answer that right after the break here on Consumer Law Hour. If you have a question, the phone number is 855-765-1045. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. We're here with Eddie and Chuck Fair of Fair and Fair. And we've got a special guest today here to answer your student loan questions. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 855-765-1045. And before the break, you were answering a question. And what was that?
Yeah, the question is that what percentage do you believe are federal student loans versus private student loans? And I would have to say, just based on my own practice, about two-thirds are federal student loans and one-third are the private student loans. And the private student loans are handled much differently, which I could discuss the differences between the two, but I think we might have someone on the phone.
Looks like we've got Ryan from Jacksonville on the line. So we're going to go to him and see what his question is. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. So what's up?
Well, I was just going back to Eddie had a show up not too long ago. He highlighted a study that said if we forget the $1 trillion worth of student loans, that we could really help the economy by doing that. So I started thinking, that's just a wonderful idea. Why don't we also forgive anybody who took out a loan for a car that they can't afford, or really just took out any credit card debt that they couldn't afford? Let's just forgive that too, and show that we don't have to be responsible. And who could come up with that kind of study and think that that's the way to solve this problem?
Well, I mean, the point I was just trying to make is that why do we have to incur so much student debt? That was the idea I was talking about. Because you've got a country that spends trillions of dollars on things that don't matter, or they don't need, and here you are. I mean, an educated public is going to make the country greater than it is, and you're giving people opportunity.
I can answer that question.
Look, I went to school on a handout. I went to school on a handout. I mean, you know, I'm not.
You call it a handout? People go to school on handouts too.
I went to school.
So there's no limit where we give handouts. It's a government program. Once again, it's the government that put their hands in education, the medicine, and everything. They create the problem, and they're going to solve the problem by just giving it away. I mean, that's just not the country I recognize it. We're responsible for our actions. Who thought of giving an 18-year-old kid access to $100,000 when they have no idea what a balance sheet looks like? You know, just say, you're going to school? Okay, you're eligible for $100,000.
I mean, that's a good point. I think the issue's with the schools, too. I mean, the tuition has,
But the school, the reason they do it is because they told the government's going to subsidize them.
Well, there already is. Let me just say, in regards to the federal student loans, there already is, because of the forgiveness programs, like I said, the income-based type programs, most people who go through it do not pay 100% of their loans over the length of the pay period. I mean, most of them, there are some now since the last few years where if you qualify, you are done in 10 years. So based
if you do exactly what the government tells you to do,
exactly,
go to work in an underprivileged area, that is such command and control. I'm just really flat out in amazement that some of the theories out there is to forgive everybody who took the loan. First of all, don't give an 18-year-old kid access to $100,000. You know, I mean, there was a time where we could see a doctor without costing us an arm and a leg. There was a time we could take an education when we could pay for it by working at McDonald's But then the government, with their, you know, their kind heart, gets involved and just messes the whole thing up. So I mean,
it is. And let me just say, it's more of a
people that think government can answer, can take care of all our needs. I just love you people.
That's why it's important.
I'm sorry. I'm getting upset. I'm sorry.
No, thanks. It's okay. That's the reason why this is more of a...
That's why we love the show, man.
Let me tell you, this is something that really has to be addressed by Congress and everything else because it's more of a political issue. What I try to concentrate on is what are the current laws now and how are we going to deal with it based on the current laws.
Oh, yeah. I know. You're reacting to the...
I am. I get clients all the time who come in and just say, this doesn't make sense. I don't understand why. I got to say, well, you know, what makes sense, what's common sense and what's right versus what's legal are two different things.
Right.
And so they don't always jive together. And that's the reason why.
It's always totally different.
Yes, sir.
I know what you have to do. I love that you try to help people. And, you know,
there's not very many of us out here.
Right thing. Yeah, but I just feel sorry, really. I feel sorry for this 18-year-old kid that is clueless, taking out a $100,000 loan on some kind of education that's not going to give them a return of ROI. And the government is really the enabler in this. I mean, if it wasn't for the government, that kid would not have access to that money.
Listen, tuition's more than 10 times what it was in 1990.
Right.
Yeah,
and to live in a dorm is more than almost four times what it costs in 1990.
I know, but you know why, right?
Well, I don't know why. These schools have all these endowments, and they're becoming corporations. They're not
trying to make money.
Yeah.
Exactly, because they have the government looking out for them. They can do this because they know the government will give these students that kind of money. Education has gone three times higher than inflation. And anytime you subsidize something like that, it's going to go up in price because nobody's accountable. And then there comes a time when people have to realize that, oh, wait a minute, this free ride wasn't really free. So why get yourself, why does the government do that to us? I mean, I know the government wants to be very loving and caring, but you know what? Loving and caring doesn't mean you have to enable people to do wrong things. That's just, I mean, the wrong.
We definitely appreciate your comment, Ryan.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks. You're welcome. Thank you for your comment.
Yeah.
Take a lot too.
And so it looks like we also have Kate in Jacksonville on the line who also has a comment on student loans. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm great.
So what did you
have? I know the answer. The answer to how it gets such a high debt is that it was a private loan and I was unable to make the payments. Now it's federal. And while I was unable to make the payments, the amount that I owed doubled because of fees and interest.
Yeah. What you said, there's something you said that doesn't really make sense. And that is a private student loan never becomes a federal student loan, and a federal student loan never becomes a private student loan. It can be confusing sometimes because they're serviced by the same companies, NABBY and Sallie Mae, can actually manage a federal student loan as well as a private student loan.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're talking about is the nastiest thing that I see in student loan work is called interest capitalization, which means that if you're in forbearance or deferments where you just because you're unemployed or for whatever reason, you get permission not to make payments for a while, the interest that still continues to accrue, and that interest sometimes yearly, sometimes monthly, depends on what it is, becomes principal. So you're paying, an interest on top of the principal, and that just keeps going on and on and on. I've had a lady who came in who said, I had a $4,000 loan. All of a sudden, it's $24,000. What's going on? I can't owe that much. And I said, when was the last time you made a payment? She said, in 2010. And I said, well, all that interest just builds up, becomes principal, and you pay interest upon interest. And that might have been what happened there. We've got to take care of that. It's probably a federal student loan. If you want to contact my office, we'll be happy to look over for you.
Well, it was Wells Fargo, and now it's Department of Education. So that went from private to federal.
It might have been. It might have been the old prior. It was before 2010? Because most likely it was where you got the loan from Wells Fargo, and it was guaranteed by the federal government. It could have been a federal loan, but it was issued by the banks before 2010.
Okay, that could have been what happened.
Yeah, it's a FEEL loan. They call them federal family education loans. Those were the only loans available in, other than the private ones before 2010. And what happens is the banks would issue the money, and then once there's a default, the federal government pays the banks, and then they come after you, and that's probably what happens. So, again, we can if you contact us, and I was telling Eddie.
What's your phone number?
Yeah, just I'm with the law office at E.R. Musa, and my phone number is 296-7704, area code 904-296-7704. I also have a website. It's MusaLaw, MUSALAW.com. And I was telling Eddie that, for, you know, I usually run a full-blown analysis of all federal student loans where I get, it's about 10, 11 pages long. It explains all the loans you got, what the status of them are, what the available options you have. And I'll be happy to give a third off the normal charge for that for anyone who says they heard me on the show today.
Thanks, Eri. Kate, you can always call me, too. I can get you his number if you weren't able to get it down. Call okay. Farrah, and we'll get you in touch with him.
And Eddie, I know you were saying, you know, how are private student loans handled differently? I already went through what I do when I get a federal student loans. And the private student loans, we look at them. We determine what the status of the student loans are. Are you making payments? Are you not making payments? And then we look and see how did the current person who has the loan get the loan. It's kind of like the old mortgage things. They got to show chain of title, mm-hmm. you know, show did they transfer it properly, that kind of stuff. Second, I look at was the entire loan really a student loan or was it used for other purposes? Because if it's not related to education, to higher education, you may be able to discharge part of the loan or even all of it, depending on what it is. Through bankruptcy. And then if you're in default, in other words, they're threatening a lawsuit against you, and if they got all their ducks in order and they say, hey, they pretty much have you here, there's not much we can do. There's also statute of limitations. They got to sue you within 5 years of any payments. Then we'll just try to negotiate a settlement with them.
So it looks like we've got another caller on the line. John from Mandarin wants to say something about student loans and the money being accessible. How are you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm going to drive to a bank line, so if I have to disconnect, I apologize for that.
Okay. So what did you have to add to the conversation?
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation for people who take out a student loan. The bank, in most cases, usually, I would think, gives the loan to the student. But the situation is, you know, if I take a mortgage out, which I've had four mortgages since 1978 here, I never went delinquent, never defaulted. But if you ever did, they have an asset to take away. The same thing with a car. You get a car loan or, you know, you have a lease car, you know, they'll put that thing on a hook and take it with them. The problem is with student loans, you can't take anything away. I mean, other than the fact that you have a degree. And that's what the college gave you, but they have no responsibility once you gave, you know, they give you that degree. They're off the hook. They got the money and they ran, you know, you just left with the things. But yeah, I also have doctors and lawyers and professionals, government workers who are delinquent in their loans. It's a crisis, you know, if you're going to make something, you know, if you're going to, you know, relieve some debt, maybe I should get some relief on a mortgage after paying it for 15 years on a 30-year mortgage or 20 years after a 30-year mortgage. I mean, it's a lot of free money being thrown around like it's nonchalant. It's kind of unfortunate because, you know, a lot of people don't go into any type of default, whether their house, their car, their loan. And then there are people who just, like I said, you know, colleges could, like I said, have all the endowments. You know, rather than charging $400 a credit hour, maybe they can charge $40 a credit hour. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know, most
that's the root of the problem.
You know, most people, I mean, we're talking about when things go wrong here. And so, and we're talking statistics that sounds pretty high. But in reality, most people do pay their student loans. And
do we know the percentages of ones that are in default?
I can't tell you. I think I had it in 2000. I have statistics from 2015. In fact, I'm getting out of the book I wrote. You can go on my website.
So actually, you can give us that answer. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. Yeah. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour. If you have a question, phone number is 855-765-1045. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. Today we are having having a conversation about student loans, and we have one more caller, David in Lake City, wants to make a quick comment. Hi, David, how are you?
Okay.
So what did you have to add to the conversation?
Well, I was sort of going to agree with the last couple of callers, mm-hmm. you know, but I think we're loaning money to people that you never get loaned to in the first place. But I don't understand what you can say to people that have worked in bars or worked waiting tables and have busted their butt, came home like 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning and got up, went to class the next day and worked their way through school and got out and got a job. And now they're looking at the people that farted their way through school, took out student loans, never did much of anything, and are out there doing whatever. And you're telling these people that busted their butt, you got to pay for his student loans. And I'd also like to know how many people that take out these student loans actually graduate and even use them. Because I think that's a big problem right there. People go to school.
If I can just interrupt you, we actually had that statistic because before the break, that was a question asked. If you want to answer that real quick.
Well, I mean, that specific question, I can't tell you but let me just say, and like I said, I wrote a book in 10 things you need to know about your student loans. And in the book, I put Market Watch in 2015 said there are over $1.3 trillion in outstanding student loan debt, and it's increasing at $3,055 every second. There are 40 million Americans carrying some type of student loan debt. 70% of student loan graduate college with debt, and only 37% of borrowers are paying their debt. That seems kind of low. I don't know about that, because I ran into a lot of people who are saying they're paying their student loan on time. But if it's true, this is in 2015, that 37% are only paying it back, then we have a serious problem here.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you say that I forgot the percentage they're paying it back, but right. I know a lot of people that have no intention of paying their student loan back because they know it's going to be forgiven, so they have no intention. Well, I look at it like the housing crisis and everything. We loaned a whole bunch of money to people to buy houses that couldn't afford them.
You can't
we're
really
loaning a whole.
Yeah, you can't really get.
Thanks for your call, David.
You can't really get it forgiven because if you're on an income repayment plan and you pay off the entire plan as agreed, and whatever's left over is forgiven. But if you just don't make your payments and you work somewhere, they can garnish 15% of your wages, intercept your tax refunds for federal. Yeah. So that does happen all the time. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody has a question for you, how can they get in touch with you?
Again, they can contact me at Musa, M-O-U-S-A, at musalaw.com, or just musalaw.com, 296-7704, and I'll be able to tell them exactly what they got and how they can take care of it.
Thank you so much for your time. Okay. You've been listening to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV, produced by Scott Young, and this has been by Consumer Law Hour again with Eddie and Chuck from Fair and Fair. Thank you so much.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.